Good afternoon. I'd like to call House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 11th, 2024, and the time is 1:49 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grimberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Talia with the Juneau LAO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Johnson, Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, Representative Groh, Representative Sumner, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to bring back House Bill 227, Electric Utility Liability, and House Bill 238, Criminal Mischief in the Third Degree. For our first agenda, we will bring back House Bill 227, Electric Utility Liability by Representative Rauscher. And I would like to note that, unfortunately, the director of the Division of Insurance is in another committee in the other body and is not available for questions. We are trying to see if maybe she could pop over, but the last communication that we had with her is that she is unable to be available at this time. So I have Representative Carpenter. Can I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number one. That's also B.5.
There has been an objection, and I will now have Mr. Bob Ballinger come to the table to explain my amendment number one. If you could please state your name for the record and walk us through this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Ballinger from Representative Vance's office. And so if you look at the amendment, this is a attempt to address some of the concerns that was brought up in discussion in committee, and to create a little bit of balance, maybe that would help facilitate this legislation making it through the process. If you look at Amendment One, what it does is it takes at the very end of the first paragraph on page one under section one, it adds the language that you'll see on the amendment on line 5-6, where it says, and the utility was in compliance with the vegetation management plan under AS 4205-141. So essentially, it's what it's saying is in order to gain the immunity that is provided, then you have a vegetation plan in place that's consistent with those regulations. And so that's the only line that's basically added to this until we add the whole another subsection, which is on the rest of the amendment. And we really tried to keep the amendment very simple because the bill was simple. And so we want to try to keep the bill fairly simple. But if you look, what it does is the commission shall adopt regulations that require a regulated utility. So we want to make sure that we're only dealing with utilities that we're talking about here. Regulated utility that offers electrical service to establish a procedure in writing by which the utility will manage vegetation to protect the reliability, safety of the utility's facilities in this paragraph. In this paragraph, regulated utility has a meaning as pointing back up to the statute 4205-254. So we're talking about the same utilities. So they have to have a vegetation plan. And then it says established standards. This is the commission will establish standards for a vegetation management plan required under the section. The standards must be incorporate industry standards and provide for regional, topical, and community differences in the state. So Alaska, very diverse state, very different communities, very different regional differences. So the standards that are established cannot be a one-size-fits-all. It needs to be broad enough that it can incorporate, you know, different utilities. And then there was a concern brought up by the bill sponsor that this may actually require the commission to go out and inspect and verify that the vegetation management plans are meeting the standards. So we put in paragraph three to make it sure that, once again, this is the commission, the regulation will say, do not require vegetation management plans required under this subsection to submit or inspected, certified, or enforced by the commission. So essentially the way this works is vegetation management plan standards are adopted by the commission. If the regulated utility decides they want to follow that, then like that, they gain the immunities that the bill provides. If they don't follow those, then the only way this is policed or regulated or whatever is they lose that immunity if a lawsuit's filed against them. So for the most part, I would say the utilities are probably going to adopt the plan. Most of them already have and follow the plan to gain that immunity. And then the rest of it is basically renumbering and putting the information, you know, in order. And then down at the bottom, you'll see that it provides for an opportunity for a delayed enactment. So essentially, part of this bill can go in effect right away. Part of it will be enacted after the rules can be developed through the administrative process. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I suppose I understand the amendment, but I would point out the bill is to limit utilities' liability for circumstances that are beyond their control, i.e. the vegetation, which is beyond their easement or right of way. And so I just think that it may be slightly problematic that the commission shall adopt regulations and the limitation on liability requires that they be in compliance with those regulations, but there's no process where they can say, you've submitted a vegetation management plan that meets our criteria. So they'll have one. They may think it meets the criteria, but there's not been any certification. So I think it would always, like if there was a lawsuit, the claim would always be made that they've not, that they don't have a proper vegetation management plan because there's no, under three, no certification or no acknowledgement by the commission that whatever vegetation management plan they put in place actually complies. So I worry that that just maybe even expands their liability.
I'd be happy to answer that if you want me to.
Would please state your name.
Yeah, so Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office. So the way that this would start is anytime a person had a vegetation management plan in place, and they had worked to try to establish those standards, the first thing the utility would do is file a motion to dismiss under this provision that provides immunity. And so instead of litigating, you know, going through the whole process, they would have to litigate the motion to dismiss. And frankly, I think it would probably also deter some lawsuits, if in the discussion beforehand, you know, the utility is able to, with a demand letter, present to a potential plaintiff or plaintiff's counsel that there is a management plan in place, that they have taken steps to follow it, and may actually make it where this case itself is not very valuable to bring.
Before you continue, I'd like to state that Representative Allard has joined us at 151. And we also have Heather O'Clary, the statewide right-of-way chief, and then Ms. Carrie Ann Baker from Homer Electric Association. Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in brief follow-up, I was going to see if we could ask the bill sponsor about their stance on the amendment, if that'd be possible.
Absolutely. Representative Rauscher, if you would please come to the table. Please state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is George Rauscher, District 29. Madam Chair, to the Chair, I've read the amendment just recently, and I haven't had the moment to fully vet it. At first sight, it looks like a good change. I'm caught off guard because I just got it a few minutes ago, and I'm trying to fully vet it. And it looks fairly fair at this point, but. If you could give me a minute or two, I'll completely give you an answer. Thank you.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Rauscher, for the record. At this time, since it's a new amendment, and it does include directives from the RCA, I think it would be fitting that the RCA could comment on this particular amendment, and just because I believe that's where it should lie right now, the answer.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. We are seeing if RCA is available. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is to a utility, and I understand we have one on the line.
Yes.
It's my understanding that in the previous version of this bill and the previous legislature that it did include a vegetation management plan. And we heard on the first day of the discussion that there was a couple of utilities that talked about how it was too onerous. And so I'm curious if they can comment about the vegetation plan being onerous for the utility and why it was taken out and then from this bill, and now we're putting it back.
Ms. Baker, did you hear the question from Representative Gray?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, Carrie Ann Baker with Homer Electric Association. Yes, I believe the question is, would a vegetation management plan be onerous to a utility? And why was it taken out of the prior version of a previous bill? And my answer to the first is I don't have that language to the previous bill in front of me as we sit right now, so I can't answer that particular part. But preparing, implementing, and overseeing a different vegetation management plan is not onerous to a utility at all. I think the issue comes in for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and I would echo what Representative Rauscher said about inviting somebody from the commission to speak to this committee about what those obligations and responsibilities would do, because I've been on a couple of other hearings recently, and at each one of those hearings, someone from the commission had testified that they were concerned about their level of additional work right now based on their current staffing levels. And so I can't speak for the commission, of course, but I did hear that testimony and their concerns about some additional responsibilities that were being assigned to them. So I would encourage this committee to have them come and speak about this particular thing and the impact that it would have on the commission directly. For us, we have a vegetation management plan. We implement it. We use it. We would not want to go through regulatory oversight and get into a fact-finding inspection of those before we got liability. I'm not even sure if that would involve sending commission staff out to verify that it was being followed or how that would work, but that part would be a little bit onerous to us.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is for anybody. It's my understanding that no state in the country had implemented a bill like this except for Utah, and I believe Utah included a vegetation management plan. So I'm thinking that this would put us in line with the other state that has implemented something like this. I don't know if anyone can correct me.
Any further questions? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I have a question regarding the amendment. When we're saying we're adding the words and the utility was in compliance with a vegetation management plan after the section that talks about defining where liability is not going to be assessed to the entity, the question would come into my mind, if a vegetation management plan encompasses a very large geographical area, does the utility have to be in compliance with that management plan everywhere that the management plan is put in place for, in order for the liability to, or the civil liability to not be in effect? Meaning if I'm just curious from a legal perspective whether, you know, an incident could happen in one particular area and they're in compliance with the vegetation management plan for that area, but if, as written, if they're not in compliance in another area, does that present a loophole or a way to claim that they're that the courts would then say, well, you weren't in compliance with a vegetation management plan. Were you or weren't you? Anyway, I do have questions, and I don't think we've got the answers today. But since we don't have the people to answer, Madam Chair, I made the amendment. Move to table the amendment until we can get the right people here to answer some of these questions.
Hearing no objections, amendment number one has been tabled.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to offer amendment number two at this time.
Thank you, Representative Groh. And Representative Gray, amendment number three.
Madam Chair, I move amendment three.
There's been an objection. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment does two things. Number one, it adds the word entirely on page one, line 11, following the word originated. What this does is it states that the liability shield only applies when all parts of the vegetation in question are outside the utility's right-of-way. If there is a part of a danger tree, for example, inside the utility's right-of-way, this change would require that the utility be responsible for addressing that vegetation. The second change removes the words of the trunk from page 1, line 14. This makes it so that the utility is able to cut or remove vegetation that is within its right-of-way as long as any part of that vegetation is within its right-of-way. This amendment helps address some of the concerns from members about vegetation that is immediately adjacent to the utility's right-of-way. There was all the talk about like a branch, but most of the tree outside of it. And this is basically just stating that if any leaf part of that tree is in the right-of-way, the utility can cut it down.
Representative Sumner.
I remove my objection, Madam Chair.
Is there any further objection?
I think we should hear from Kenron. So I object.
There's been an objection. Do you have a question for Ms. Baker, Representative Carpenter?
So, Ms. Baker, have you reviewed this amendment and the effect that it would have on the legislation, and do you have a comment?
Through the chair, Carrie Ann Baker, Homer Electric Association. I have briefly reviewed the amendment that was presented, and then I've sent it to our staff. While we agree with some of the comments that were presented by the sponsor of the amendment, I'm not sure. I haven't received feedback that that's how we interpreted the bill. So I would like to kind of put in some additional comments on that. Homer Electric Association already takes everything that comes into its right-of-way. So if there are branches or if it is leaning, we look at the right-of-way as almost an imaginary line going up and down into the sky. So anything that bends over or comes, encroaches in any way into Homer Electric's right-of-way will be taken. That's part of our standard process, and we do it each and every day. I would want some of our I sent it over to legal as well as our field crew just to have them take a look at it. Because in concept, the way this amendment was described is something that Homer Electric is already doing, but the way it's written, I'm not sure that that's how it would be interpreted.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say from what I've heard, it sounds like Homer Electric is doing what my amendment would ask them to do.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. And through the chair. So I would, there's two things. One, if it is doing it, there's no harm in putting in state statute. Two, so I do like your amendment. And two, I'd like to hear from the sponsor how he feels about the amendment.
Thank you. For the record, Representative George Rauscher, District 29, to the chair, through the chair to, I guess, to our Representative, Vice Chair Representative Allard. My own opinion on this is it's not needed, and I think it's very confusing. I think it. I'm not in favor of it. The discussions that I've had with the APA, they thought that it did exactly that. It confused things and made it harder to have an understanding of a tree entirely out of the right of way, and yet those that are partly in the right of way to what degree are you trimming them? To what degree are you not trimming them? It gets this very sticky and very complicated, and I don't think it needs to be in the bill.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to my reading, it would allow a utility to completely take down a tree, any part of which is in their right-of-way, but then exclude those trees which have some extension into the right-of-way from the exemption. So I would guess that what would happen is the utilities would expand their vegetation management plan to essentially cut down trees that are sticking into the right-of-way, which probably would, I mean, there'd be some costs associated with that. There'd probably be less fires. They'd still be not liable for trees entirely outside of their right-of-way. So, I mean, I think I'd be supportive of this.
Any further questions on amendment number 3? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So if any part of a tree extends into a right-of-way, the utility can cut down the whole tree. So isn't that de facto giving them an extra 10 feet of right-of-way?
Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, for the record, to Representative Johnson. My understanding is if you have a tree that's a major part outside the right-of-way, okay, and you want to cut it completely down, you have to be on private property to do that. You can't stand behind a tree and cut down a tree. So are we giving them permission to go on private property, or what are we giving them permission, which is why the confusion, which is why this is not exactly something that they quite readily want to say yes to, and they find it probably not good for the bill at this point.
Are there any further questions, Vice Chair Allard?
I think Representative Johnson wanted to do a follow-up.
Follow-up? No?
Yes, through the chair, Representative, maybe it goes to the utility company on the line, but currently I know that if my neighbor's tree goes over my fence line in any way it's bothering me, I can just go and whack that part off. So I don't know, with Representative Johnson brought up a valid point, so I don't know if it would expand. God, here we go again with the bill that should be so easy. I don't know if it would expand over 10 feet, Representative Johnson. Can you help me understand your...
The reason for the 10 feet, I just figured a tree that's, 5 feet or so that they can cut down because part of it's in, and they cut the whole thing, and that's de facto taking 10 feet of that tree, or at least 5, and expanding that right away and giving the ability to basically come on private property and cut down a tree that may just have a couple of branches that stick over. So I'm just concerned about private property rights. And, I've got some trees that may stick over that I certainly don't have somebody come in and cut down.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have anybody from Department of Law or Ledge Legal online? I guess what Representative Johnson says may be somewhat of a concern. It could be a taking by the state, actually, by the utility. I'm not sure, but
brief at ease. On record, we have Mr. Ian Walsh from Legislative Legal Services. Representative Sumner, would you please restate your question for Mr. Walsh?
Through the chair to Mr. Walsh, I don't know if you have amendment number 3, but essentially in the bill, it is removing the part of section 1B that applies only if part of the trunk is inside the boundaries. And so by my reading of it, if any part of the tree is inside of the boundaries of the utility's easement, then the utility could go and take the entire tree. Is that correct? And would that be a some sort of a taking if we pass this legislation?
For the record, this is Ian Walsh, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Sumner. That is a possible interpretation of the amendment. I agree. I would have to ponder whether it would constitute a taking or not. I'm not able to give you an answer to that off the top of my head, but I hope that that answers your question.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, I mean, that's how I read it. So I don't know if maybe we should table this amendment as well. I move to table Amendment 3.
Hearing no objection, Amendment Number 3 has been tabled. Thank you, Mr. Walsh, for being available. Do we have any more questions for Mr. Walsh while we have him from Legislative Legal Services? Seeing no other questions, that puts us back in pause mode for further deliberation on the impacts of these amendments. Representative Sumner.
Actually, Madam Chair, I was going to see if, since we have Legislative Legal Services, if they could maybe give us an opinion on what would constitute a taking as far as this bill is already worded with Section B, any part of the trunk extending may be a taking, because I think under statute right now, wherever the tree is rooted, this sort of is the ownership, but I'm not entirely sure that you don't own the airspace above for the extension of the tree, or who would be liable if you kill a tree that's rooted on your neighbor's property. So if we could maybe get an opinion from Legislative Legal Services as to what the current situation is and how we might be affecting that, that would be probably helpful.
Mr. Walsh, do you have an answer right now, or do you need to get back with us with any further insight?
For the record, this is Ian Walsh, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Sumner. What I'll say at the outset is that I can't give you a certain answer without looking into this a bit further, but as the bill is currently drafted, it provides that a utility is not liable if a part of the trunk is inside the boundaries of the utility's real property. My understanding is that if the tree straddles the boundary, then it's sort of treated as owned by both sides of the easement. But I would have to do a bit more research on that to confirm and find any governing case law or statutes.
Follow up?
Well, and follow up, and in particular, Mr. Walsh, I'd be interested in knowing the situation for a trunk that's or a tree that's entirely rooted on the neighboring property, but is perhaps leaning into the easement so that a part of the trunk is then within the utility's easement, if that makes sense.
For the record, Ian Walsh, Ledge Legal, through the chair to Representative Sumner. I will have to get back to you on that one.
Can I ask a question for the moment?
Representative Gray.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ledge Legal, if my intention from reading the bill was that cutting, girdling, or otherwise injuring the tree resulted in the tree dying, that my feeling was that the bill was trying to excuse the utility if the tree died because of the way they cut it. And it was saying only if a part of the trunk were located there would they get excused for that. And so my intention by deleting part of the trunk was saying, like, well, if they cut this huge branch off and the whole tree dies, they shouldn't get held liable for that. Even if none of the trunk was in the easement, that's what my intention was to give the utilities this immunity from liability for killing a tree by protecting their right of way.
Did you have a question for legislative?
Yes. Legal? I hear that you're interpreting my amendment differently. And so I guess my question is, how do we say it so that I give the utility the immunity I was seeking to give them?
For the record, Ian Walsh, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Gray. I would be happy to draft an amendment that accomplished that intent with perhaps some additional language that would clarify that it would permit the utility to remove the vegetation that is within the easement. I think that might be where some of the ambiguity is coming from, is that it right now isn't clear with the amendment and the way it's drafted whether the utility would be able to, under this provision, remove the entire tree or just the vegetation that is within the easement.
Thank you.
Any further questions from Mr. Walsh or for Mr. Walsh? Hearing none, thank you, Mr. Walsh, for being available. We will now set House Bill 227 aside so we can do further work with the sponsor of this legislation and making sure that the amendments are drafted in a clear and concise manner. Thank you, Representative Rauscher, for being available. We know that you are double duty with another committee right now, so thank you for that.
Thank you to the committee.
Brief at ease. Back on record, we will now bring back House Bill 238, Criminal Mischief in the Third Degree, by Representative Josephson in its third hearing. And I will open public testimony for 238. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to make public testimony? Seeing none, I will now move online. Unfortunately, there is no one who online, so I will now close public testimony on House Bill 238. For those watching online who did not have an opportunity to testify, you can submit your written testimony to house.judiciary@akleg.gov, and it will be uploaded to the public record. And there is one amendment by myself. Representative Carpenter, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number A.4.
Hearing no objection, amendment number 1, A.4.
Object for purposes of discussion. Sorry, I'm just trying to find the amendment.
Representative Gray.
I move the amendment. Someone needs to describe it.
Mr. Ballinger, would you please state your name for the record, and please walk us through the purpose of the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office. The amendment essentially was just listening to the concerns of the committee, along with concerns Representative Vance had about the legislation, and just try to make sure and narrow it down to exactly what the sponsor of the legislation intended. So we put some language together, and actually Representative Josephson amended it and had some great ideas that approved it, and so this is the outcome. So if you look, it starts off the same, you know, the desecrate, damage, whatever, and then the way we define it is a building, structure, or personal property used for worship, that's what it used to be. Now you go down and add the new I, and so it takes that out, and then it's real property that has a place of a religious education or worship located on it, and is owned, leased, or used by a religious organization or used for any religious purpose. So now that should encompass all the churches, a church-owned or operated educational facility. It should encompass all that. And then it also includes tangible personal property. We inserted the word tangible in order to cover concerns that Representative Sumner had last time. But tangible personal property used by a religious organization or used for any religious purpose. And then the language down there just modifies the language in the other paragraph to be consistent with what we modified.
Any questions on amendment number one?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
Without further objection, amendment number one has been adopted. So that puts the bill before us as amended. Does the bill sponsor wish to make any closing comments? And I would note for the record that Representative Josephson is in Finance Committee, and he's moving some needed amendments and couldn't be here at the time, so he's asked his staff to be here. If you could please join us, Mr. Schroeder, please state your name for the record.
For the record, Alexander Schroeder, staff to Representative Josephson. Madam Chair, the representative is much more eloquent in his closing remarks. I'll keep it short and sweet and say that we saw the amendment as friendly and are happy with its adoption. We think it solves a lot of the concerns of the committee, and we hope for your support.
Thank you. Are there any closing comments before we consider a motion for this legislation? Representative Groh.
I just wanted to thank Representative Josephson and his staff member, Mr. Schroeder, for their hard work on this and this important matter. And I'm going to be supporting this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further comments? Representative Carpenter, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that House Judiciary Committee move House Bill 238, version 33-LS-1101/A from committee as amended, with attached fiscal notes, and give Legislative Legal Services permission to make all technical and conforming changes as necessary.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 238 as amended has moved from committee, and I ask that after we adjourn that you will please sign the report. I want to thank members. We've had multiple meetings going on and other committees, and I know that Representative Groh has a bill hearing himself. So I thank you for our quick work on things today. That concludes our business. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Wednesday, March 13th at 1 p.m. to hear House Bill 358, Prohibit AI-Altered Representations by Representative Kroc. Then we will hear House Bill 254, Prohibit Pornography to Minors, pending referral by myself, the chair. And then we will hear House Bill 278, Admin Regulation Review Division by Representative Carpenter, all in their first hearing. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It is 2:33 p.m.